You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey, you. Welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real featuring Sage Hayes. We have a very rich discussion that I will tell you more about in just a minute. But if you are listening to this on the day this episode drops, there's only 1 week left until Explore More Summit 2019. It's our fourth annual summit, though it's the fifth time we've done it. We had a little breakout session in December of 2017. This is my heart and my soul of every year. And this year's theme is finding power in personal and collective pleasure. All 27 conversations are about pleasure. Who gets access to it? What our barriers are to it? How we can expand our understanding of it? What stories we need to change around it, and so much more. The lineup is fucking outstanding. Saraya Shamali, who wrote Rage Becomes Her, Afrosexology Again, Emily and Amelia Nagoski. You probably know Emily from the book Come As You Are that I am constantly recommending to people. Dr. Laurie Brado, who you've heard on the show before. Melissa Carnegie from Sex Positive Families, who, if you're not following, get on that, and dozens of other incredible folks, some of whom you've heard on the show before and some of whom will probably be new to you. But it is entirely free to attend. There's 2 to 3 talks per day for 10 days. And if you register at exploremoresummit.com, you not only get to watch all of the talks as they unfold each day, but there's also free workbooks that I mail out and a really beautiful, supportive Facebook group where we talk about our feelings and our responses to the talks. We ask for support and help. It's a really beautiful place to feel less alone about all the things that you've got questions about. So I hope that you will join me there. I'm so excited about this year's event, and it's gonna leave you thinking about things for months. Some of these conversations are incredibly deep and incredibly rich. I am exhausted from everything I've been pouring into it. The show's been late a few times because I'm putting so much in. So please join me over there at exploremoresummit.com. It all starts February 25th, 2019. So this week, I am talking to Sage Hayes. Now, Sage was a speaker at last year's Explore More Summit. And Sage specializes in embodied healing and liberation. Sage has some beautiful perspectives about the ways that we can work with trauma, work with healing to increase our access to pleasure and to connection. Has a really clear understanding of embodiment and how it plays into not only the depth and the potential of our relationships and our pleasure, but also how it contributes to better world and better lives for everyone who comes after us. Sage just has such an incredible perspective. And so in our conversation today, we start with an exploration of what embodiment even means, How embodiment contributes to things like choice and agency, why being embodied is not a reasonable thing to expect of ourselves all the time, and sometimes we do need to leave the body and dissociate and numb out. We talk about building a relationship with our bodies and our trauma, how pleasure connects us to all of those things. And then we go really deep into safety and why pleasure really isn't accessible to us if we don't have a certain level of safety. So what does safety even mean? Where are we maybe losing a sense of safety in our closest relationships? How can we do the tender, vulnerable work of working on our trauma? And then we talk about the importance of cultivating presence to really unlock the phenomenal potential for the erotic and for our pleasure, and also why expectations can create a lack of safety. So there's some really, really, really rich stuff here. I also invite you, if you are a Patreon supporter, head to patreon.com/SGR podcast, because Sage and I recorded a little bonus chat for this week. We talk about how we can help people in our lives who are experiencing panic attacks or who are being triggered by their trauma, how we can be better partners. And also, I asked Sage for some advice on how we can bring people over into understanding our perspectives, especially those with the most privilege in our culture. And Sage had some really wise thoughts about that. So if you want to hear that, you can support at $3 per month or above to get access to the weekly bonuses that I put out with guests and on my own. If you support at $5 a month and above, you can help me answer listener questions. And I put up 3 new listener questions in the past week. So if you are one of the $5 supporters, be sure to check that out and to weigh in with your advice and thoughts. So again, that's at patreon.com/SGR podcast. So let me tell you just a little bit about Sage and then we will jump in. Sage Hayes is interested in creating collective conditions for embodied healing and liberation. In their work, Sage weaves together principles and practices rooted in somatic experiencing, biodynamic craniosacral, systemic constellations, quantum physics, and love. Offering one-on-one support and workshops, Sage is curious about the evolutionary possibilities at the intersection of emergent life and multi-layered consciousness focused on justice and liberation. Sage's pronouns are she, he, they, whatever your experiences of Sage in the moment. So here is my conversation with Sage Hayes. And don't forget, go to exploreitmoreatsummit.com and register for your free ticket, because this thing is about to unfold. I will see you there. Hey, everyone. Welcome to my chat with Sage Hayes. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Sage.
Oh, thanks so much. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I had so much fun connecting with you at Explore More Summit last year. Our conversation was just so rich and nourishing. And so having you on the show is something that I've been looking forward to for months. You do really important work in the world around somatics and embodiment and the ways that those things intersect with trauma and social justice. And for people who aren't familiar with what embodiment is, can we start there? Can you talk just a little bit about what it means to be embodied?
Yeah, that's such a great, I'm so glad you just kind of slowed that down and just asked about that. So for me, in my experience and my sort of invocation around embodiment is that there's so much happening on the planet and there's so much happening in history that our bodies are asked to cope with, to deal with, to experience. And I think embodiment is kind of like our capacity at any given moment to be able to be in relationship with our world around us and with ourselves. And in particular, our sense of choice and agency about that. Are we able to sort of have choice and to do the things that we have the most passion and desire to do, or do we not have that choice? And I think being in a body, depending on your identity, your class background, race, sexual orientation, gender identity, all those things obviously intersect into how safe it is or how not safe it is, how dangerous it is to be in a body in different contexts. So there's a lot that goes into thinking about, can I be here in the now, in this body, in the fullness that I want to be here? And if I can't, how am I even managing that in a way where there's still choice, right? That's what I'm really interested in, because it's not reasonable for us to be fully embodied all the time, especially in the sort of context of oppression. But I'm really interested in how do we even find liberation in that while we keep working on the systemic levels of change to be able to create more possibility and safety for us to be in a body. So it's like, how do we find liberation in the now, given the restrictions?
Yeah.
The now is kind of like what we always have. And it takes a real willingness and a courage to be open to the ways that kind of our whole selves are trying to show up, you know? And sometimes that's like super embodied, and sometimes that's the opposite. And knowing on some level that that's enough given each moment, and that everything we do now to be able to increase our capacity to be here, that all does have massive ripple effects on both systemic change, right? Because if we're showing up with more capacity and more choice, which ultimately connects to more of a sense of power, that enables us to go and participate in these environments that are sort of like fraught with systemic oppression, and to be able to like be both energetically changing the air in those environments, and of course making the other changes too, such as policy, representation, and things like that. So I think one of the things that is really interesting about this moment, I mean, there's so many things that are interesting about this moment, but one I think what is so exciting about stepping into power and embodiment is that sometimes it's not so easy to see the impact right away, you know? And one of the practices that I have been really leaning into myself and inviting other people into in groups and things like that is starting to develop. I know a lot of folks are talking about ancestral healing work right now, which is working with the people that came before us in our lineages. I'm also interested in inviting us to work with our descendants, the people that are going to come after us, and start to build a relationship with those folks, because there's it's so amazing. Every small and big choice that we're making right now around deepening into our bones and into our bodies and into our power has this like incredible impact, ripple impact into the future on our descendants. And I don't mean just like children that we have. I mean that the people that come after us that benefit from the choices that we make. Mm-hmm. And I really want to encourage people to not only connect with ancestors, but also to descendants, because there's a lot of potency at both ends of that spectrum.
Yes. I love this invitation of like, when we're thinking about our bodies and how we are in life and the choices and the capacity that we have, being able to kind of stretch in all directions towards who did we inherit our bodies from, who, you know, gave us the things that we've got now, these folds, these flesh, and then who comes after us. And that's such an interesting way to like position ourselves in something that's so much greater than us, which I think is like you said, potent and offers a lot of power.
It really does. And it does contextualize kind of our lives within time and within space and within like a greater lineage of love and a greater lineage of yes and a greater lineage of courage and willingness. And it is pretty amazing to look back and to look forward, to be able to feel perhaps that there's just a bigger arc, which, and even connecting into the future, that we might be able to even tap some of that embodied liberation that is going to be on the planet, maybe after we're gone, but that we might even be able to sort of touch some of that as we lean toward our descendants, and that they're going to get to experience it because of what we've done. And we might even be able to tap some of that right now. We might not see it all around us, but that we might be able to even, you know, cultivate that sort of generative garden within ourselves of, future freedom.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in exploring the ways that pleasure helps to connect us to the here and the now. You know, in my experience, I'm not saying it's universal, but in my experience, pleasure is accessible now. Mm-hmm. The sensations are happening now. The feelings and just the process of pleasure, it's unfolding in the present moment. And so the more present I am, often the more I'm able to really experience and sink into that pleasure. And so like pleasure is a way to help us to get present and build that capacity. And also pleasure as a way to help nourish us because we are existing inside of trauma, so many of us, and because we are existing inside of a world where being in our bodies can be so hard. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know, like, for you, when you think about pleasure, how does that weave together with this embodiment work and even positioning ourselves in this bigger arc of like past and future?
Oh, wow. Yeah, for sure. Such a great piece to bring in. Well, I think the first thing I want to say about pleasure is that, our deepest design, I guess, in my belief, our deepest design is built for pleasure, right? There is a generative blueprint. All we have to do is look around, like look outside of ourselves into nature, and we can see this like phenomenal beauty and sort of geometry that nature, just like on its own, in its own way, in its own time, kind of just builds all around us all the time. Mm-hmm. And there is so much, I think, when, at least when I drop in and am able to sort of, you know, be in an environment where that's reflected and where I'm able to feel my feet, you know, on the ground and to feel the textures and the wind and the sun, the pleasure of interacting with nature, right, with the environment is, it's almost like it sort of connects me to like, it is, we really are sort of, the design is so perfect. Mm. And I know that sounds almost like a weird, like a religious thing to say, and I don't mean it in that way, but like ultimately, like the deepest blueprint is kind of sort of towards life, towards pleasure, towards beauty. And then being able to interact with that and experience that. And I just think it's the thing that makes me feel whole. It's the thing that makes me feel like I have a place on the planet. Beauty is kind of the interaction, and then pleasure is the sensation that comes up. Mm. You know? And whether it's nature or whether it's relational or whether it's sexual or any of that is just, the potency of the possibility of what pleasure is possible right now. Like you said, right now, to me, is like extremely infinite, right? And at the same time, what we know is that when people don't feel safe, right, the pleasure isn't really that possible.
Yes.
So we have this really kind of like, you know, tricky situation right now, because the now is always potent with infinite pleasure, like, and possibility. But it's an easier said than done, often, depending on the body that you're in and the history that you've been through, or the history that your ancestors have been through. So there's a lot around like being able to surrender to pleasure or release into pleasure that we think that's a great idea. It feels really good to talk about. And being able to talk to those parts in our body that are like, pleasure isn't safe. Or last time I did that, you know, this is what happened, or it's too complicated because there's also a sort of aspect of uncertainty and pleasure. You don't know what's going to happen next. So being able to feel and experience pleasure kind of assumes underneath it that that there's safety, you know? And safety is an interesting word too. I think of it not just as a static term, but as a very dynamic, multi-layered sort of entity in itself. The idea of like, if my body feels safe, then I'm able to release into pleasure, right? And that's all sort of contextual. So that's kind of the first thing I say, and I think we can go a lot deeper in this, but I'll pause there and kind of see what your reaction is to all that.
I actually literally just had this conversation with my therapist last week, who's an SE therapist, about safety. You know, we've been starting to get to a place where I'm feeling into the depths of the ways that I don't feel safe. And what I'm finding for me is that it's this really, I love that you use the word dynamic, that there's this spectrum that I'm constantly moving along in certain circumstances and in certain contexts. Certain levels of safety feel more available to me, and in other contexts, they feel less available to me. Sometimes it feels downright dangerous and safety's off the table. Other times it's mostly safe but with a little asterisk. And even being able to kind of tap into that, I feel like it is giving me an opportunity to then play with a lot more nuance around the ways that I'm connecting with my body and with pleasure and with the here and now, rather than it's like, yes, I'm safe. No, I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That makes so much sense. And I think it is so multi-layered and dynamic, because I think when we use a word like safety, especially when a white person, which I am white, uses a word, there is sort of like this infusion of like, is this word kind of a static word that we're going to set as the norm or as the bar? And I just really want to be transparent about that, to say that I am not interested in using the word safety in any of those ways, and that safety is relative and contextual to who you are and to your history, and that what's safe to you, right? Sometimes like violence is actually safer for some people than not. So I think the complexity and the nuance of safety is like, it's sort of per person, right? And per history and per situation. And but really kind of, if we take that notion of safety, which is to me, right, like if we want to connect it to pleasure, like with a semblance of safety, my body will allow me to feel pleasure, right? With a semblance of like, I got myself, and I know that nothing terrible is going to happen on some level, or I can at least tolerate my uncertainty around that to be able to like experience myself. And I think being able to, we're all in different places around building our capacity to do that with pleasure, sex, sexuality, even connectivity. I actually think often intimacy and connectivity and pleasure can be much, at least for me, scarier than sort of sex and sexual connection. Mm-hmm. So like, I just think the nuances around that are really important. And each person has their own. We all have this like amazing body that's, you know, billions of years in the making of evolution, and we're wired for connection, you know? Yeah. We're wired for sex and sexuality. We're wired for intimacy. And we often have a lot of interruptions in our early childhood or through social trauma, or lots of shit has happened to us that have basically created a whole sort of room full of evidence that has sort of said, yeah, we know you have this impulse to connect, right? Like that's a deep human drive. But here's all this evidence that it's not safe to, that it's not, you know? And so it's really tricky living in a body where there's all this evidence all around all the time that's sort of saying, and right, and this evidence room is actually given more precedent in our body. It's sort of given, it's given the steering wheel a lot more than our sort of mind or desire.
Yeah.
Our nervous system kind of like, that's, it really drives our yeses and our nos more than probably we even know. So it's really, I don't know, kind of honest to say that if we've had things in the past that have really compromised our safety, that it's really reasonable that our system's going to contract. It's going to have to negotiate and build some capacity and kind of talk to the part that's distrustful of a situation and build capacity around that so that, you know, you can establish more ground within yourself to be able to move toward that, whatever it is that you desire.
Yeah. I so appreciate the, like, the compassion in that. I'm really interested in what it takes for us to turn towards the ways we've survived, our coping mechanisms, whatever it is that has gotten us to here. Like, I'm so interested in turning towards those things with this, like, gentle acknowledgement of the wisdom that they bring, the hard work that they've done, the ways that they've gotten us to here, which runs so counter to so much of what we see in the culture around needing to fix ourselves and how bad it is to do certain things in order to get through a day, how bad it is to numb out, you know, in service to capitalism and conformity and all the other things. But I just so appreciate this like gentle tenderness of, yeah, maybe contracting around connection or around pleasure is exactly what you need, because the evidence tells you this is not a safe thing. You have been hurt badly doing this before. And like, that to me feels like, okay, maybe I'm not doing something wrong.
Yeah, absolutely, Dawn. And, you know, just to share a little bit about my own personal experience with that, like, you know, to be compassionate to those parts of ourselves, right? First of all, that is like an act. That in itself is a radical act of massive self-love, because, which, I mean, social, personal love, because these are the parts, it's like we want so much to be what we can imagine we can be, right? And then we have these triggers or contractive points where that send us in a whole different direction of fear or like other sort of behaviors that maybe we're not even so proud of, like that we don't feel like we can control, or that we don't feel like we have agency over. So being able to slow that down and to be compassionate and to acknowledge like, wow, this has really been a behavior that really, really helped me in my life in the past. And like one example of that for me, I'll just, you know, just to share is like, you know, I'm adopted. And so just a little bit about what that means to me is the first 3 months of my life, I was in a foster home. And so in the beginning of my life, I had two very intense transitions and losses, right? I lost my birth mother. Right. And then at month three, I lost my foster family. So what happened is that connection got really disorganized for me. Mm-hmm. And that plays out I laugh, right? But I could be sobbing, right? That plays out in every connection I have.
Mm-hmm.
Because like this part of the setup for me was like, I can't trust connection. It's not going to be there. Right? Like that's a little bit about my early blueprint story. And then I had an adoptive family that was totally there and available. But by the time I got to them, my little body had already endured so much confusion and so much disconnection that I have been working with that my whole life and like really watching how it shows up in my adult relationships. So you know, for many years, I just ignored it, you know, and I just sort of deflected some of my like more dysfunctional behavior and relationships onto other people, because that was like the best I could do, because I was definitely was not ready to look at that, because to look at some of that, unfortunately, also means that we have to start to feel some of that.
Yeah.
And that's that's really, I mean, that is tender, vulnerable work. And, you know, deep sort of early trauma healing work isn't for everybody. I don't think, you know, I just really trust people's process and what they need to do in their lifetime. And sometimes it's like healing and sometimes it's not. But I knew for me, really increasing my capacity to be compassionate to those very young parts of me that, you know, it's just, you know, for example, for me, it's just like easier to shut down than to deal with my discomfort in intimacy, right? Yeah. And it's a long road to develop that capacity. And that is directly connected to the opportunity for me to feel pleasure. Because if I can't come into connection, then at least for me, I can't have like all the goodness and the yumminess and the juiciness of that connection. Yeah. And so like fortunately and unfortunately, it's meant that I have to sort of weave back and do some work from, you know, early stuff and bring that capacity into, you know, the now. And it's like beautiful work. It's treacherous. It's terrible. It's amazing. And that's liberatory work, because if we can build capacity around those places where there's been trauma, whether it's in our own lives or in our lineages, and we really build a capacity to have some new choices, that means that we can move forward in a new way. Our lineage can move forward in our new way. And the descendants that I was talking about get to also have a whole like compounded experience of that. So there's so much compelling evidence that doing your work and in whatever way makes sense for you, right? You can go see this type of practitioner or do this type of movement or go to this type of community. Like it really isn't about like there's a right way to do the work, in my opinion. It's about like what community or what type of work you feel met, you feel held, you feel safe enough, and that you can really kind of do some of this more tender, vulnerable work in service of building that capacity for new choices, you know? And to me, that's what trauma work's all about, you know?
And so much of what I'm hearing, which is something that, like, I will not say I am not currently still resisting, but I will say I've slightly increased my capacity around the resistance, is this slowing down. Our culture values speed, productivity, working no matter the cost, production, like thank you neoliberalism, and so much of this work to really be able to like hear the cues and the messages from our bodies, the sensations that it's trying to offer us, the stories. Like there's a slowing down that has to happen. And I think that that's where for me, and I know some of the other people that I've worked with, a lot of resistance comes up around that slowing down because of that piece you said around, then you got to feel the things.
Yeah. I think that's really, really well said. It's like, how do you slow down just enough so you don't freak out?
Right.
Right? Like that's real. Like that is real. And that's cool. No, you know, like, so, you know, but can you just slow down a little bit so that you can notice maybe just a touch of what's, you know, what rhythm you're going at or what's trying to emerge in your body that you're, you know, you're working so hard or you're doing whatever that you're sort of avoiding. It does take a lot of practice and courage. And I do think in somatic work, one of the most important teachings is this notion of, can you do a little bit?
Yeah.
Can you slow down a little bit? Can you notice with your body just a little bit? Because it's not, I think the tricky thing about like when we say pleasure, it can be this word that can be so overwhelming, and we can sort of think, oh, I should be feeling pleasure full on right now. It's such a full word, right? It sort of calls us to this image of like, whatever, I don't know, whether it's like, you know, sexual pleasure or like sitting on a beach and blah, blah, blah. Like it's kind of this full bodied image for some people. And it's like, that's not the road that's going to necessarily get us to pleasure, is to sort of think all or nothing, because mm-hmm. all or nothing kind of just keeps us stuck.
Yeah.
So it is kind of like, small incremental little steps of titration. Titration just means taking a little bit at a time and offering something new to your system, and then going back to where it's secure.
Yeah.
Right. It's not even about going forward, forward, forward. It's about like taking a step into what's uncomfortable and then actually taking a step back and letting that new experience integrate, so that when you step forward again into like a little bit of that discomfort, you might feel a little more comfortable there, or you might be able to go a little bit farther. So I think there's also the body and the nervous system, needs that type of pace to be able to acclimate mm-hmm. to what, to uncomfortable content.
Yeah. A lot of people who listen to the show and who write in are people who have experienced violence of some sort. There's a lot of sexual violence, of course, for people who listen. So many women, so many trans folks and non-binary folks. And then even beyond that, just the violence of living in the world, depending on your identity and the body that you're in. And and so for people who maybe aren't aware of how trauma impacts the body, can you talk about that just a little bit, like how trauma lives in the body?
Yeah, absolutely. So, sure thing. So there's a couple of ways we want to think about this. We want to think about one-time events like a sexual assault. Like there's that type of trauma, you could also say a car accident or something like that. And then there's also chronic trauma, which is if you're in a Black or Brown body or Indigenous body or a trans body, sometimes a queer body or a poor body, like there's just ways that you can't get out of overwhelm because there's so much threat coming at you all the time, right? Yeah. So there's sort of acute events and then there's chronic events that are very traumatic. So what it means though that something, at least in my working definition of trauma, is that it's something that overwhelms your body's capacity to cope. Like there's stressful events that we go through that really, maybe sort of make you wobble or make you kind of throw you off balance, and you're not even yourself for a couple of days afterwards. A small car accident or something really terrible went down at work, or even an event on the national stage that you're affected by, and how you it's very stressful, but that your body's able to get back to into somewhat of balance after it. Mm-hmm. And it might take some time. But something that's traumatic, it basically is like breaches the barriers of your capacity to be able to like hold yourself, to be able to stay in balance. And what makes it traumatic is that, you get overwhelmed, your body, your brain and your body is incapable of getting to safety because there's something that's so threatening and you're incapable of getting to safety. And you may get stuck in a certain state of activation, or you might shut down because it's just too much too fast. Yeah. And there's a whole sort of mechanism in the brain and the nervous system that it goes through to sort of decide, where things might get stuck. Our bodies are so brilliant in dealing with trauma, but how we know we may have gotten something may have sort of is sticking with us is that there's symptoms afterwards, is that our body can't quite get back into balance. And that bound, when something overwhelming happens, what happens is we go into a survival state where our, hormones are dumped into our bloodstream. We try to get away from it. We try to fight it off. And if that energy isn't fully, all of that survival energy isn't fully metabolized after the event is over, then that energy is then stuck in the body and the body is trying to manage it, right? So just imagine like, terror or fear or things like that, that we're not able to be fully processed because something might have just been too much. So there's all that energy in the body, and then you have to go back to work the next day, or then you have to like play it like nothing happened. Like all sorts of shit goes on with trauma, especially sexual trauma, that, you know, you're sort of trying to, you have to go on with your life or whatever. And so all of that energy, what we know from the studying animals in the natural world is that the mammalian body, right, is capable of being able to metabolize that energy through sort of a natural process of shaking it out and finding ways to sort of process it. But as humans, we're so terrible at creating spaces for people to like have their process after something overwhelming happened, or when something overwhelming is happening, for the body to be able to process this, which often looks like, you know, shaking or resting or any number of sort of intense feelings kind of processing through the body. And so when that doesn't get to happen, the energy can get stuck in the body, and that survival energy gets bound up and starts to get managed. And that's what creates symptoms down the line, right? And symptoms that often sort of seem like, we don't know what's going on. Like, here's a symptom, we can't trace it to anything. Often those sort of like untraceable symptoms are usually connected to something overwhelming that's happened. Not all the time, but sometimes it's pretty easy to track it once we sort of look at somebody's history. So trauma is kind of like all of that survival energy that doesn't get metabolized. And with chronic trauma, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, I think it's like quantumly more complicated because, you know, as a trans person, like I, you know, so much of my life in public, it's never, to different degrees, it's never been safe. Yeah. You know, I'm still navigating bathrooms, grocery stores, airports, using my ID, families, there's never a day and many, many moments in a day where my transness doesn't create some survival activation in my body.
Yeah.
Right. And so part of how I manage that, right? So this is what I say to folks who kind of can't get away from, you know, cis women, brown and black body. I mean, anybody who's sort of under chronic threat all day, every day, it's like, this is where the self-care practice is, not just for like la-la self-care, but like this is survival self-care to be able to like create practices where the survival energy, which is involuntary, right? It's not like you're sort of choosing to feel this, but it's that fight flight energy that doesn't fully get to get processed. We need to create spaces where that gets more metabolized, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I have to go to the gym every day. Like that's one of the ways that I metabolize that. But I think there's a million ways you can do that. And you know, we can talk more about that, but that's a really important part of, I think, just for people living in this moment of today, how are we tending to that, like, you know, sort of constant charge of not being able to get away from what's very threatening.
Yeah.
We're wired to be able to get to go through an event that's threatening. We're wired to be able to go through that and then to be able to metabolize that afterwards. But what we know now is that people, we're not creating the support, and there's just too much to be able to be for our bodies to be processing that. And, you know, and that's where the sort of fatigue comes, the depression's coming in, the insomnia, all these symptoms that people think they're sort of crazy. People think, why do I have depression, or why do I have anxiety, or why can't I sleep, or why can't I just slow down? And it's like, if we look at the nervous system, it actually just tells us the most obvious story of like, it's because our nervous system is stuck in a state of, you know, fear.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really understandable. And being able to learn how we can kind of downshift from that activated state into a deactivated state. And again, for each one of us, right, this is kind of from danger to safety, what we need to be able to do that is going to vary from person to person. But that is so connected to our health and our vitality. Mm-hmm. And the more space that you know, charge is taking up in our body, that survival energy, it's like the more life force is being demanded of it. And so it's sort of taking away from our vitality. Mm. So anyways, that was like a huge mouthful. I'll pause there.
That was awesome and important. The only thing that I just want to like add to that is, and this is something that I think is sometimes hard for us to remember. It's kind of like, you know, we give love the way we want to receive love type thing is what's too much for me, what would potentially trigger that survival response for me may not in any way be too much for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so like also just having some understanding for the fact that we might both go through the same thing and have very different responses for very different reasons. And so like allowing people to have their responses without trying to prescribe what that should be.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I just think we have a lot to learn about, especially in group spaces, you know. I think I just want to say, like, I think in community and group spaces, this is such a challenging piece to work with, because first of all, we're often trying to organize to create change, you know, so we're trying to move forward sort of to treat the collective nervous system, right?
Yeah.
To try to get it back into regulation and health. But in the process, we have to sort of work with, you know, many nervous systems together that are holding a lot of charge. Mm-hmm. And how quick it can happen that, you know, one person is sort of triggered and it's, you know, sort of starts to roll. And the tricky thing about the nervous system is like once one person, this is like if you ever see like National Geographic and you watch a pack of like gazelles in mm-hmm. the, you know, in the desert or wherever they live. And, you know, all of a sudden you sort of see the camera flashes to the leopard, you know, and you see what you see is you see one gazelle just prick its ears, right? Even though the leopard's like miles away, and you see one gazelle prick its ears. And then what happens next is everybody pricks their ears.
Yeah.
And so when one person's nervous system gets pinged, it actually, biologically, we're wired that everybody's nervous system's gonna then get pinged because it's actually like a, you know, it's a pack survival response.
Yeah.
So how do we, right, part of our work is how do we, in any group situation, you know, how do we notice the impulse to get swept up in the charge and in the velocity that like fear can come into a room? And how do we, you know, how do we sort of practice like staying grounded and noticing our, you know, noticing kind of what comes up in us? And is it possible for us to kind of not go with the sort of energy in the room that is going to start to basically play ping pong and, you know, mm-hmm. go back and forth and become sort of a conversation of like a survival based dialogue versus kind of a more grounded in our bodies in the present moment dialogue.
Yeah.
And I think it's super messy and I don't think there's a right, you know, I don't know if I have a big prescription for it, but I do want to say like that I think is part of our charge right now is to learn how to cultivate this sort of consciousness in groups and in communities where we almost like plan on the trigger. We plan on the activation and we acclimate our bodies and practice together. Like some people are going to get activated and, you know, how do we sort of, if you're not one of the people that are activated, how do we sort of stay present and how do we balance that out, you know, versus kind of everybody getting swept up into it.
Yes. So that brings me to something that you mentioned before we hopped on, which is how can we, in both these groups and even in our most intimate relationships, like how do we start paying attention to the nuance in our bodies and, as you said, what's between us? I think that that's something that so often in our most intimate relationships, a lot of what we do is a playing out of scripts that we've been given culturally.
Mm-hmm.
And also, kind of rushing through our interactions often. Mm-hmm. And so for us, whether it's in one of these larger groups, like even if it's a, you know, a kinky group and we're all at the dungeon, whatever it is, or it's in our most intimate partnerships, how do we start noticing what's happening in our bodies and what's happening between us? Because there's so much information there.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. Well, I think, you know, to me, the first thing is like, you know, there's something about just kind of an ongoing commitment and cultivation of connectedness to our bodies. Like even before we start to get into, you know, relationship or in a sexual experience, it's because it's like being able to walk in a way that's like super resourced. Mm-hmm. And that's grounded in self and grounded in like, I'm here, I got me, I feel here. And how I know I feel here is because my heart rate's pretty chill and I can look around and, you know, I feel pretty safe, you know? And that if you're in a more sort of triggered, activated state, it's likely not gonna go well. You know, like it's not even about well or whatever, but it's like it's likely you're not going to be able to necessarily have the quality of connection that you might really want. Yeah. And so that if there's a tending, right? There's an invitation to attending to self before going to connect with other, whether, you know, sexually or intimately, that I would sort of say is really important. And then there's kind of like paying attention to. And then there's the practice of paying attention. Mm-hmm. We're so used to, we all have our different languages that we speak, you know, there's verbal and audio and there's touch and there's, you know, there's all sorts of nuance in language and, being able to, open up our awareness to be able, our nervous systems are absolutely so intuitive around paying attention to other people and getting a sense of, is that person here? You know, are they, if I look in their eyes, is there a sense of here-ness or not here-ness? Are they, is their body doing one thing, but their energy doing another? I think there's a way to that we all, I want to invite us all to lean into like read, trying to sort of read people a little bit more about what's going on in their bodies. Cause there's the story our voice tells, right? There's a story our mind tells. Mm-hmm. And then there's the story our body tells. And being able to start to pay attention to that in ourselves and other people is really, really helpful. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, checking in with somebody and just, you know, being like, are you here right now? Like, you know, and how do you know you're here? Or what's one way you know you're here? You know, yeah. Or to be able to say, like, to be able to start to notice, right? Like for so many people with relational trauma and sexual trauma, like leaving our bodies is such a brilliant strategy, like just yeah. going up and out. And it's like, you know, I could keep having sex or whatever. And, you know, it could look from, you know, everybody could think that I'm here, right? Cause I'm doing this and that, but really I'm kind of like out the door down the street, you know, whatever. And so there's a way to, how do we start to pay attention for like, what are the smaller signs of, you know, that give us like smaller indicators of when we start to feel like we might need to leave our mm-hmm. bodies? You know, how do we catch those indicators? What are some of those sensations or those behaviors that we do when we start to get nervous or we just start to feel unsafe? Because usually it's not an all or nothing thing. Usually it's kind of a series of accumulating, you know, accumulating sort of markers along the way that, you know, sort of eventually tip into, I'm either going to shut down and leave my body. I might be mm-hmm. here. And how do we catch those and how do we help other people catch those? And that is such an act of love for self and other. Mm-hmm. Because again, connecting it to pleasure and the depth of pleasure, like having people being fully embodied and being able to be here, that's right. Because if we're not here, we can't really feel the depth of pleasure that's available to us. Yeah. So being able to slow down, even though it's uncomfortable and it's like we're maybe not practiced in it, it's like the trust that builds of self to self or self to other the trust that that builds, and also kind of the I don't know, even slowing down just creates an opportunity for the body to catch up to the now,
yeah,
and bringing us into the present, then to be able to go from, you know, more of a here and now place, I think very much connects us to like more possibility for pleasure, you know, mm-hmm. and for what we really desire. And we're so not used to that, right? It's not what we watch on television. And it's like, nobody is teaching us these nuances. So it right. takes a lot of practice, you know, and it is kind of scary,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and again, it's like, if it's too scary, like it's, don't do it, right? We're just going for little bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something that I've learned in the work that I do that I think is so important to name here is that sometimes the thing that creates a lack of safety is approaching an interaction with expectation. Like if I know when you give me a back rub that underneath it, even if it's unspoken and even if you're not aware of it, there's an expectation that something else is going to be asked of me or hoped of me, that can trigger a feeling of not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so just really each of us having to take the responsibility of noticing, am I approaching this with expectation, with hope, with something that might feel like pressure? And being able to just be really honest with ourselves around that of like, God, yeah, I really do want this thing. Well, then maybe we can talk about the fact that I really want this thing,
mm-hmm.
instead of ignoring it or not speaking it and trying to like work our way around it. I think that creates a lot of small little like safety pricks in mm-hmm. relationship. And we may not even realize how much we're eroding safety when we do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I would just add to that, just that the whole necessity of, you know, there's nothing wrong with expectation, right? There's
right.
nothing wrong with being like, yeah, this is where I'm going with this. And if, you know, if that energy is infused in a way that's not, that's sort of being indirect.
Yeah.
You know, here's the shitty truth is that most people on the planet have touched trauma.
Yeah.
Right. Like most, and a lot of that is sexual trauma. And so, and then you throw in sexism and all the objectification of marginalized bodies. And so it is so important to have, no matter what your desire is and your expectation, to be able to like totally honor that and hold that and think that that's a totally beautiful thing. And at each sort of next part of the movement toward what you want, to be really tracking and paying attention for consent,
yeah,
both in yourself but in the other person. And that people who have been traumatized in a, you know, with touch, it's like consent got really disorganized.
Yeah,
like yeses and nos, like when you've gone through touch trauma, like yeses and nos around touch can be really confusing. And it's like never, you know, to find your voice or to find your sense of agency. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's really clear, but sometimes it can be really, really complicated. So what I would say is, because most people on the, you know, a lot of people on the planet have touch trauma, why not be super thoughtful, like you said, about communicating and, you know, really, you know, sort of checking for consent. And there's so many different ways to do that. You know, mm-hmm. and to continue to do that throughout the process, because again, you know, somebody might seem like they're there and saying yes, and you know, they've left their body, and you still might have a pleasurable sexual experience with that person even, and they might even have some pleasure. So it's not like, it's like, and that might be on some level fine. And I think the deeper call here is like, what can we do here to create conditions for like an even more embodied experience that has choice for both people, you know? So it's like not trying to make anything wrong, but how do we like create even more generative, you know, capacities and possibilities so that mm-hmm. pleasure can amplify and safety and trust can deepen.
Yes. And so connection can become so much more expansive and deep and vast. I mean, the potential inside of that when everyone involved is doing their best to tend to themselves and to kind of track each other and to communicate openly. I mean, the potential inside of that is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so infinite. And I will say too, and I'll put a plug in for like learning how to listen really deeply and intuitively to someone else's body, like it creates this whole portal, this whole doorway into probably like pleasure unforeseen.
Yes.
Right? Because being able to like really to deeply listen, and even if it's fast or it's slow or whatever, but being able to like listen with your hands and listen with your eyes and listen with your intuitive body and your, you know, your energetic self, and learning how to listen in those ways is like, first of all, being listened to is sexy.
Yes.
Right? Like being listened to is often like kind of a turn on. And then there's like being tended to in that way where I'm listening for your pleasure, right? I'm not only listening for your no's, but I'm definitely listening for your yeses.
Mm-hmm.
The more that I learn about the nuances of those, the more like just like phenomenal doorways we're gonna find, erotically or otherwise. And or at least that's been my experience. And I just think like practicing that quality of listening, while it may seem like a little bit of like, oh, I gotta slow down and blah, 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 I wanna just invite like, there's such a doorway of depth there that, you know, possibly like there's just more pleasure that could be like kind of quantumly amazing there.
Oh. Heck yes.
Yeah.
I sign on for that.
Yeah. Me too. Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So you and I have to go record our little bonus for the show's Patreon supporters. But before we do that, can you share with people how they can find you online and stay in touch with the awesome work that you're doing?
Oh, thanks so much, Dawn. Yeah, you can just look me up on embodiedliberation.com, or you can put my name in, Sage Hayes. Pretty much you can keep up with, I got a bunch of workshops coming up on the West Coast, and I'm around. So just embodiedliberation.com.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I will have that link in the show notes so people can just click through and see the cool stuff you're up to. If you are a provider, definitely check out Sage's workshops for providers. That would up your game so much. And Sage, thank you so much for bringing your wisdom and your experiences here to the show. I know this is going to give folks a lot to think about and feel into. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on, Dawn.
Yeah. To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. Of course, I will be back next week. Click through the show notes to check out Sage. And if you are a Patreon supporter, pop over to patreon.com/SGR podcast, where Sage and I are going to go have a little bonus just for you. Until next time. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue. Treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the Vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.